Good morning, Napa Valley. It is time for another edition of All Things Napa. Happy to be here on this cool, crisp morning in the beautiful Napa Valley. My name is Lee W. Miller, and I am a full-time realtor that takes a break from my joy of helping people acquire and dispose of their most valuable assets once a week to do this show because I love connecting businesses, I love referring people, and I love helping promote others' local businesses. So thanks for joining me today. We're going to have on our show today Mr. Paul Knobman with Vistage International. You're going to learn some cool stuff about that organization. And, of course, our regular sponsor, Bernie Narvaez, Narvaez Insurance Services. He was at the city council meeting late last night, and we're going to talk about some community issues and learn the latest and greatest of what's going on. And we always have some good back and forth on those issues. But of course, it is time for me to do my promotion of my favorite events that are upcoming. We got the Vine Trail Locomotion event on March 21st. That's always a great event, and it's the biggest fundraiser for the Vine Trail, and I encourage you to check that out. Tickets are almost sold out for that. And if you can't attend that event, by all means, become a Vine Trail supporter. It costs a whopping $47 a year, and that $47 goes to help build and maintain the 47-mile Vine Trail, which will eventually, when completed, go from Vallejo all the way to Calistoga. Then coming up on April 4th, one of my favorite eating events, BASH. That's Appalachian St. Lena. This is a fundraiser for scholarships for the CIA Greystone. But it's an opportunity to drink the very best wines while tasting outstanding food prepared by the CIA student chefs. And they have a competition and they win cookware while they are raising money for that organization. And then, of course, we're all excited about Bottle Rock Napa Valley 2020. So there is that as well. And then, of course, one more great event coming up April 25th. As I joked last week, who here loves prostate cancer? Nobody does. And that's why on April 25th, if you get involved and want to come to this event, we can help raise money to fight prostate cancer. So keep those events top of mind. Quickly, before we introduce Paul, our Napa nugget for today is that only 4% of all the wines grown in California come from Napa Valley. That's just 4% of all that wine. Now, it's the best wine, but it's not a real high number. So that is your Napa nugget for today. With no further ado, I welcome my friend, Paul Knobman. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Lee. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Okay, great. Speak right into the microphone. Don't pull a Bernie. Bernie sometimes talks real quietly when he's concentrating. So, of course, it would help if I had turned your microphone on. So now, welcome, Paul. How are you?
Great. It's nice to be here, Lee.
Okay, great. So tell us a little bit about your background, and then we'll launch into what Vistage International is all about. And I'm sure that our listeners are waiting with bated breath.
Thank you. Well, I was born in Coronado, California. I'm a third-generation native Californian. My father went to the Naval Academy, and he was stationed in Coronado. I grew up in the Oakland Hills with my younger brother and sister. And I went to high school in Southern California at a military school called Brown Military Academy. I was an all-CIF quarterback while I was there, and I went off to BYU to play football. I graduated in 1971, And I taught school. I taught biology and coached football and track at Petaluma High School for 2 years. Then I received an MBA from Pepperdine in 1978. I've owned my own wholesale lumber company. I've built houses as a general contractor. And my family owns Golden State Lumber, and I've been involved as a high-level executive with Golden State Lumber for over 35 years. 6 years ago, I stepped away from Golden State Lumber, and I started wondering what I would do next. And somebody suggested I become a Vistage chair. So I knew what that was, and I made a run at it, and lo and behold, I got chosen to be a chair in the Napa Valley. So what is Vistage?
I was just going to ask.
Well, it's your own private advisory board. It's a group of people, presidents of companies, owners of companies, CEOs, that hold you accountable in your business and even in your personal life. And and what you do, Vistage is about not necessarily answering your questions, but questioning your answers.
Oh, and that's good. Especially Vistage, for leaders, because leaders typically are leaders because they think they have all the answers.
Exactly.
And that's not to be a slam on them. They're supposed to have that attitude that I got this, I know what I'm doing. But by having this group of other leaders and CEOs and presidents of companies, then you can bounce those so-called answers off of them and get a little bit more insight.
Yeah, well, it gives you an environment to go into that's, there's trust there, it's all confidential. You can talk about anything and you can get help from people that their sole purpose in life is to help you succeed.
Right.
And Vistage has been around about 65 years. There's 24,000 people in Vistage groups in 15 countries.
Wow.
And it's truly the most crazy thing, a wonderful thing I've ever done. I am passionate about it. I really enjoy mentoring, helping, giving back. And even though I have a lot of executive experience and have an MBA, it's not about me giving the answers. It's the power of the group.
Right.
And it's an amazing process. And the trust and friendship and camaraderie that's built up over time is really amazing.
So, you know, we always hear that it takes a village to raise a child. And so it's kind of like that concept of it takes a village or a group of other business professionals to help probably derive the optimum results for everybody's business.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you say that this has been one of the most challenging and rewarding things that you've done. Tell us a little bit about why that is.
Well, I mentioned to you that at one point I used to say this is the hardest thing I've ever done. Because I'm asking people to step out of their business one day a month, and I'm asking them to pay me some money to do that. And most of the reaction I get is, you want me to step out of my business once a month and pay you to do it? It's a hard sell, you might say.
Right.
But I had to change my mantra around that, because saying it is the hardest thing I've ever done is a negative affirmation, I felt. So I changed my mantra from the hardest thing I've ever done to the most challenging and rewarding thing I've ever done. And it truly is.
So obviously things are confidential, but is there something that you can share, a particular success story that comes to mind, of something that perhaps one of the members of Vistage was going to go in one direction, and then through the counsel and the assistance of the group, they changed that course and it resulted in some wonderful success?
Certainly. One of my members owns a business in American Canyon, and he was thinking about buying a similar type business in Rhode Island and spending $1.5 million to buy that business. He had the money to do that, but by the time we got done processing that issue in our group, he was 68 years old at the time, And we talked to him about, do you really want to fly across the United States a couple times a month to take care of that business at your age? Is that what you want to do? And flying to Rhode Island is a difficult thing to do. Mm-hmm. So he was all ready to go ahead and spend that $1.5 million when he came into the meeting. When he left that day, he said, there's no way I'm going to do that, after we had discussed it, processed it, and went over all the different aspects of that. He decided not to do that.
That's great. So his quality of life, yeah, he potentially could have made some more money, but, you know, what's more important in the grand scheme of things? So
absolutely. And in fact, he even mentioned that he was so happy with that decision that he'd be willing to pay everybody's Vistis juice for a year.
No kidding.
Of course, wow. He was just kidding about that. But
So he made a good decision, and he maintained his sense of humor, or created one. So
that's right.
That's great. So your, how much has your leadership and an executive position helped you do this job as the Vistage chair of Napa Valley versus how much of it, because you've shared with me that this collective source of business acumen and wisdom of the group, is it like 50-50 your experience personally and 50% of you guiding the group and drawing out of them the advice and the counsel that they provide?
Well, I think it's more like 80-20. How I facilitate the group and what I bring to the table around that facilitation and the leadership around how we operate as a Vistage group is important. And I'm always willing to throw my two cents in, but it truly is the power of the group, the power of the people in the room. And somebody might say that, well, that person doesn't know anything about my business. I'm in the grocery business and they're in the whatever business. And
right.
Anyway, everybody has basically two issues in business, and it's people and strategy. And one of my Vistage chair members pointed out to me that maybe execution might be a third one. But clearly, it is the power of the group. And I try very hard not to overshadow decisions that can be made by the group by what my decision would be. Although I'm willing to share my ideas with the group, but I really rely on the power of the group.
So, and you also talked about, yeah, they're business people, and that's the core of the business. But from a personal standpoint, there's also been this camaraderie that I would imagine most of the people who join Vistage aren't anticipating that benefit as well. They're thinking more of it as the business benefit, and then they have this bonus of the personal connection that they have.
Well, we were having a discussion not too long ago in a group meeting about the value of Vistage, and one of the things I say is to prospective members is I'd like for you to step out of your business one day a month and work on your business. And someone in the group raised their hand and said, you know, Paul, we work on businesses in here. There's no doubt about that. But what this is really about is learning to become a better person. And as you become a better person, you become a better leader, a better father, a better husband, and a better friend. And that's really what it's about. It's about
right.
becoming a better person.
Right.
And there's a lot of really great things that happen around that every month.
And that is so needed. When Kim Brown Sims is in studio, we talk about, you know, my 34 years in the corporate world, and I share with her that I had one good boss during that entire time, and most of them were really, frankly, horrible human beings that were so narcissistic and so unwilling to receive any suggestions or anything else. And so if that's the only thing that Vistage is providing, that's still a great benefit to those members.
Absolutely. And I think we can't forget the fact that Vistage has a bank of about 1,000 speakers top-notch professional speakers that come and talk about a myriad of different topics, whether it's business or health, culture, marketing, or whatever, and they come in for a half a day and do a half-day workshop with the group. And those, I've been doing this 5 years now, and I've never had a bad speaker. I've had some speakers a little better than others, but every speaker brings something amazing to the group and gives the group an opportunity to learn and grow and take ideas and take them back to their company.
We're talking to Paul Knobman, chair of Vistage Napa Valley. Paul, how does someone get in touch with you if some of what we're talking about is resonating with them?
Well, my phone number is 707-267-2104. That's my direct line in my office. I still get to have my Golden State Lumber office at 2nd and Jefferson. So I still get to hang out with the Golden State people, but I have my Vistage office there. And also, my email address is paul.knobman@vistagechair.com.
And that's Knobman, N-O-B-M-A-N-N. So take us through a typical meeting, that one day a month where everybody gets together. Run through like a quick little agenda of what you guys do. And is that like a 6 to 8 hour day, or how long is that?
It's about an 8 hour day. It starts at 8:30 in the morning. We gather around protein and carbs, so to speak. We have a cup of coffee and some fruit and a bagel. And then at 9 o'clock, typically the speaker will start. The speaker will go from 9 to noon or 12:30. And then we have lunch. And about 1 o'clock, we come back until 4 and do an update and then process issues.
Okay.
The speaker comes in and does a workshop type arrangement where they really involve the members in the group. Kevin Corley, who owns Monticello Vineyards, is in my group. Many of our meetings happen in his reserve room downstairs in the Jefferson House, and he's just very hospitable about letting us use that room for our meetings. And so that's pretty much it. Other than that, I meet with all the members once a month for about an hour and a half and do a private coaching session.
Okay.
And what happens during that time, there's a specific agenda that they fill out. The first question typically is, what should we be talking about today? And if they have an issue that they're thinking about bringing to the group, we talk about that issue. We figure out the best way to bring that to the group to get the best bang for his buck in presenting the issue to the group.
So if someone's interested, their curiosity is piqued from listening to this interview, do they need to become a member, or can they just come as a guest and put their toe in the water, so to speak?
No, I wouldn't have it any other way. Yes, I would invite you to come as a guest. You can sit in on the speaker portion of the meeting and hear the speaker, as well as meet everybody in the group, and then stay for lunch. And after lunch, you would have to leave because the rest is all confidential.
Okay. And when would be the next opportunity for a guest to come?
Well, 4 meetings a year are an all-day executive session, no speaker. 8 meetings a year are with a speaker. So the next speaker that I have is in March. It's the third Thursday, typically, of the month. So it'll be the third Thursday of March, and more than happy to invite somebody to come and learn about it. I don't hard sell people on this. I'm having so much fun with this and enjoy this so much that it's not about that for me.
Right.
It's just about giving you an opportunity to grow and learn and like I said earlier, become a better person.
Right. All right. Third Thursday, and you can reach out to Paul Knobman. And what's the website that someone could go to and learn a little bit about this as well?
Well, the Vistage International website. Vistage is based in San Diego. The website is just vistage.com.
Okay.
V-I-S-T-A-G-E. And so you can go to that website, and you can get a hold of me that way, too.
Okay.
They have a way to do that on the website.
So we've only got a couple of minutes left. What Is there anything that that we haven't covered that you want to make sure that we provide to our listeners?
Well,
some little pearl of wisdom, or just anything you want to make sure that people know about.
Well, I wrote this thing. It's kind of long, but I'll just use part of it here. Unlike a job, which is for a season, a calling will beckon us for a lifetime. It creates an inner drive and a restlessness when we live outside of it, and a peace when we are embracing it and living inside of it. A job is printed on your resume. A calling echoes in your epitaph. And
I really feel like this is my calling. Did you write that?
No, I plagiarized
it. You borrowed it. Yeah, you borrowed it. It's not... plagiarism is one thing, but if you take from multiple sources, it's called research. I like that. That's really cool. And that kind of echoes that sentiment of if you really love what you're doing, you'll never work a day in your life. And that's, you know, but what you read is basically that message with a little bit more pizzazz and, you know, substance. So.
Well, one of the things I had to do with, as a Vistage chair, we go to training once a month, and one of the trainers one day asked us to write a six-word of who we are. And mine is chosen servant leader for all mankind.
Wow.
And I really feel like I've been chosen to do this. And I'm, as I mentioned earlier, it is such a passion for me. I enjoy every part of it. And I have members in Santa Rosa, and I have to drive there to do a one-to-one, and that's not a problem.
Right.
I don't mind doing that at all. So
I remember when we were talking the other day that you shared that the fact that you grew up the son of a business owner. And really, you know, you didn't grow up wealthy, but you grew up with no real challenges. You didn't want for things, and had the opportunity to take over this business. And well, I shared with you that mine was somewhat the opposite, that I had nothing given to me and put myself through college, you know, washing dishes and moving on up to being a waiter and things of that nature. And there's always been somewhat of a little bit of a resentment, or not resentment, but envy that I didn't have that leg up. And I found it fascinating what your response to that was. So share that with the audience.
Well, I think that people don't realize it sometimes, but when you're brought up in a family business that has been successful, you always have that to fall back on. And you never really know, is it me doing this, or is it, I mean, even though my brother's taken this business from $6 million in revenue to over $500 million, you would think that that'd be good enough. But no, it's always there in the background. But Vistage has given me an opportunity to do something totally on my own, and I've been successful at it. And a lot of people that start to try to build a Vistage group fail at it, and for the reasons I mentioned earlier. And I've been successful at it, and that's been a real positive thing in my life for my self-esteem. I mean, I'm 72 years old, and I'm still striving for that self-esteem.
we all are. People have been... commenting on my beard that I grew for Movember and Men's Health Awareness, prostate and testicular cancer in particular. And they said, well, Lee, it's, you know, November's over, you know, why didn't you shave? And I said, well, because I'm a sucker for a compliment. And I got compliments on the beard, and so that's why I still have it. So I totally get the self-esteem. We all need those boosts, and I'm very happy for you that you're being very successful and that you're feeling really good about what you're doing while you're helping others. Thanks very much for being here, Paul.
Thanks very much for having me.
Okay, welcome back to All Things Napa. That was very interesting talking to Paul. He is a class act and just a great guy, and I strongly encourage, if you have the slightest interest, just reach out to Paul, and he will meet with you, talk with you, and that's what we did last week, and it was great getting to know him, and in our short tenure, I now count him amongst my friends, and I'm proud to say so. All right, we're going to jump right in to our conversation with Bernie, and I'm going to skip the real estate minute. Oh, no, he's skipping the real estate minute.
Well, Lee, you threw me off for a minute.
I was waiting for the real estate minute. I know. Frankly, the irony is that I have been so busy working in my real estate business that I haven't had time to prepare a real estate minute. So therefore, we're going to skip it. And because we've got a pretty full agenda on all the goings on here in Napa, so why don't we jump in and just talk about the first thing that you want to talk about?
Well, it's an exciting time to be in Napa. A lot is going on.
It really is. And we're not talking about just all of the great activities and the food and the wine and all of those things. We're talking about community goings on and potential changes in the community, right?
Well, maybe a little more secure than potential. I mean, it's likely to happen. Okay. So, and what we're referring to is districting for the next election, not the March 3rd, but November election.
Okay.
So let me give you a little bit of background. The end of December, there was a letter of petition sent to the city of Napa by an attorney to go to district elections. If you don't know, right now it's at large. When somebody runs for city council, it's at large. That means anybody within the city limits that's a registered voter can vote for any candidate running for city council.
Or any two, depending on how many seats
the top
are open.
Right, yeah. The two. So normally it's two, and then it's mayor and two council members. So who's ever on the ballot for a city council, you can vote for them. Now, what's going to happen is we're going to go through a process, but once it's in districts, you can only vote for that member of that district, and you can only run for that district that for which you live in.
And you must live in that district.
Correct.
And the boundaries of the districts have not been determined, but
it's very early in the process. And I can run through the process here. I mean, I have a guideline of the process.
Okay. Is that too lengthy to cover?
No, actually, okay. It's important to cover it because, so 1231 petition was signed, or submitted. So the city has 45 days to respond, either with a resolution of notice to intent to redistrict or to say, no, we're not going to do it. If they do continue and have a intent to redistrict, the attorney, according to the Voting Act, election code, they have a reimbursement up to $30,000 for that work. So there was some work done.
The attorney that did the work to submit the petition because
if you look at the petition, it's several pages long, the law data. So there's some work done there. Now, what do you think, it's the right thing or not? That's a whole other discussion. But that is part of that process. And now, within 90 days, if there's no resolution of intent, litigation will proceed. So the city will go into litigation to defend themselves from going to district if they so choose to go that route. I don't think they will go into that route. But if there is a resolution of intent, then they have to have two readings at regular meetings and create an ordinance into a charter.
Two readings?
So basically two public meetings where people can have input, where they can discuss it and vote on it. Once they do that, then there's outreach for attendance and hearings with neighborhoods. There's two pre-map hearings within 30 days. So there's a few criteria for this. One is integrative communities. There is the use of recognizable natural and artificial barriers, like a river, main roads.
Highway.
So things like that nature that can be used for the district lines. There's several factors, economic factors, poverty level, educational attainment, median income, language proficiency, race, ethnicity. What was prohibited from creating these lines is you cannot favor political party, no gerrymandering, consideration of political parties, incumbents, candidates, and defining communities of interest. So those things are prohibited to influence the lines. So then they draft the map. It's a 7-day wait and publish the map. And then the post map, you have there's 45 days of hearings to interpret and create a form. And then there's an ordinance, and then there's the map created. So this is all supposed to be done before the November election. So if the city decides to do this, if there's no extension granted by the other party, it's likely to happen sometime around June, maybe July, where we would have a district in the map and everything ready to go.
Wow. That's a lot to get accomplished for governments.
Right. And this is really the legal process to avoid litigation, because there's deadlines that you have to meet with public hearings, with posting the map, but within all this, what's really important is the process of community input, because however those maps are drawn, it's going to change our community. It's going to change who gets around, who doesn't, what neighborhoods are going to be represented. And our, you know, neighborhoods, if we're not careful, some neighborhoods could be split apart. So it's important for the community to pay attention, to have some input. I've looked at other communities such as Santa Rosa that just went through this. They have a website dedicated to public input where there's different groups of different interests that could log in, register, and create a map. And I've saw different examples of maps that different community Santa Rosa residents created. And you can see the creativity in those maps, right? It's not that they're going to take those maps, but they're getting input from the community. And that's a real important part of the process to make sure the community is heard. The city's going to hire I'm going to get this phrase right, I think, geographer. So somebody that will map out the district, that will take in consideration all these elements, all the criteria and the factors, and create a map. And then that map gets posted. And I think one of the most important parts of this process is to hire the right person. So I've heard different names go around. Some people with, you know, have really good reviews, some not so much. So that's going to be, I think that's going to drive the conversation in certain directions of who the mapper is, who the city hires, which I don't know if they have already.
Right. So that's why you don't think that we're just going to pay this attorney his $30,000 reimbursement and tell him to go away and stay with the at-large election?
No, it's $30,000 when we, as the way I understand it, it's $30,000 reimbursement for the work he's done for the petition. Then we will move on into districting.
Oh, he gets that no matter what.
I believe he gets that when the city... Well, it's a fee reimbursement. According to the election code is 10010F. So we can dive into that, or you can dive into it. You can reach out to me. We can talk about it a little bit more. We just don't have enough time, but that's part of that process. The thing is I lost my train of thought on something, but I wanted to go back to how those maps are going to be drawn. That's going to be important. I personally think, and I've shared it with several people, downtown being such a big economic engine for our community, I think each district should have a piece of downtown. You can look at our map and have one district that excludes downtown, but there's so many businesses. You know, even if right now you feel that downtown is not a place for locals, then that's even more of a reason to have districts include downtown, right? So we can overcome those challenges that and continue to grow our economy. And have that discussion. What we don't want is having elected not be in that conversation.
Right.
My personal opinion.
That's a very valid point. If there were one city council person that had downtown,
theoretically, all of the rest of this council would be working, not intentionally, but against downtown, because it wouldn't be a collaborative effort. But by sharing and having that, that's something that I had not thought of.
Yeah.
I still don't know what I think for sure of districting, but my first thought is we have a better opportunity to get the best and the brightest by having an at-large election, as opposed to potentially some candidates that don't happen to live in the right district. They can't get elected. It doesn't make sense on a macro level in my mind. But I don't know if you even want to go there or if you want to stay on the whole processes and the next steps.
Well, I think what's important is to create a fair and equal representation of our communities. If we just kind of do whole numbers, if we were at 80,000, right, four districts, you can even that out pretty equally. It's just making sure that the barriers of the districts, you know, does not break up communities. We want to make sure it's fair representation. We live in a very diverse community, so we want to make sure that, you know, we create that opportunity, because there's going to be pros and cons to everything, and the outcome of this, I hope that it's a community that can create the best and the brightest within those districts.
Well, that's create the best and the brightest, provided that they live in the right areas. Or, I mean, what, hypothetically, all candidates lived within a half a mile of one another, they would be in the same district. And that would be disastrous for what we're trying to propose here.
Well, you know, I've heard other people argue that the current city council live pretty close to each other, all except one. You know, this would force people it would create opportunity for other people in other areas of the community to represent their neighborhood. I mean, that's the argument.
Those opportunities already exist in an at-large environment.
Yeah.
No one's being prohibited from running based on where they live right now.
Yeah,
they're just not running. And so...
So here's the thing. We can go on the pros and cons on this.
But you don't want to?
Well, I can. It's just I don't think we have enough time. We really should dedicate one whole thing where we can really talk about this. The thing is if you look at the last election, you know, and we talk about diversity in our numbers, you know, city council, you know, I respect them all. And, you know, they're working really great. And there's two open seats, right? That two open seats is going to really help, you know, take us in the direction that we need to. I mean, with the general plan coming up, with the Civic Center, with so much going on, it's going to be important that those two seats are it's for some, you know, somebody that's qualified, but also represents a diverse community. And having district elections can help do that. You know, so that, there's a pro to that. I think that we focus on the negative. You know, we can get into areas that can divide our community. I think this is going to move forward, and we should focus on the positive outcome of this. What can we do to make this better for our community?
Okay. All right. I think we'll leave that topic there because we're at our halfway point. And we'll move on to the next topic. And I know that we have quite a few on the list, but you get to choose which one we're going to hit next.
Yeah, last night, city council met for a long time. I mean, they left close to 11 p.m. last night, and they're talking about they had one thing on the agenda on the evening session, and that was the Heritage House Valle Verde project. So this is on north of Trancas, Valle Verde, so close to the Queen. This is a complex that's been empty for a long time. It's been vacant for quite a while.
Right.
The Gasser Foundation and Burbank Housing and several other people have been working on this place to create affordable housing. So it's 66 units. So it's two buildings, 33 units for affordable housing, and another 33 units for housing for people that are homeless. You know, so getting people off the streets and into a a building that has services, that's case managed, that has, you know, security, that they've created a neighborhood committee, a 24/7 hotline for that community to call if anything happens. I mean, from when this started to now, they've added so many more concessions to this because of the neighborhood really did not want this project. Last night, I kind of kept track, and there was only one person that was for this project in that neighborhood.
Wow.
And just, my wife works very close to that.
That's the classic NIMBY voice.
Well, it was, you know, it's not that we don't want it in the backyard. It doesn't belong in anybody's backyard. That's what the message was.
Wow. So to me, that, I mean, I'm interpreting that. And I wasn't there, but I would interpret that as the possible anticipating the backlash of being accused of being a NIMBY and therefore jumping out in front of that and saying, well, no, I don't want this anywhere. So it's not just I'm being a NIMBY. I don't think it should be anywhere. And then it kind of takes away the NIMBY rebuttal.
Well, here's another thing. I know somebody that works very close to there, and there's already homeless people in the neighborhood. There's people already roaming. The fear is that they will bring that element to the neighborhood, but the element's already there.
And I've done a little bit of research on this. There is going to be very careful screening, and it's not going to be like shopping carts all around that complex. They're homeless now, but they have to meet certain criterias to be one of the fortunate that gets admitted and gets to live in there. And this is an opportunity to turn those lives around. They're not necessarily, they're certainly, it can't be drug users, can't have mental health issues that are resulting in problems in that living environment.
Well, right? So there, no sex offenders are allowed, no gang members or recent crime activity. They will allow people with mental health issues and substance abuse issues, but there will be a behavioral requirement to live there.
Right.
I mean, it's 33 units. We have homeless people, I believe, 2017. So the number is about 323 homeless in Napa, right? And this is only 33 units. So these are people that are committing to live somewhere. Right. And if they don't behave or don't follow that, then they're going to get kicked out, like any other tenant.
Right.
So, you know, these are people that there's an opportunity to turn people's lives around that want to, even if it's a little crack in the window of opportunity, the chance of somebody being housed and turn their life around is significantly greater than they're living in their house. Not to mention the health issues.
Right.
So one of the things I learned is, you know, this person that was homeless, is now housed, and now looking to buy, has really turned his life around, but was facing severe medical issues because, you know, if you're in your car, you're not sleeping, your legs aren't up, and it's creating some kind of medical issues. I didn't really think about that, you know, how you sleep every single day, and your attention to just regular hygiene and medical assistance. And if you have one problem, you get sick, it's compounded because you don't have a safe place to recover.
Right.
Right? The elements of outside, it makes those issues even greater. So to overcome that, it's insane.
Right.
You know, it's insane to really overcome those issues. So by creating this house, we hopefully get people to turn around their lives, move out, and be on their own and make kind room for somebody else.
Rotating that open door for the next folks that are ready to turn their lives around.
And I'm in South Napa, not too far from here. And we have homeless people. I see them all the time. They're not a threat to me. They're a threat to themselves and among each other. You know, I don't feel unsafe. I feel bad that there's not enough housing. And here's the thing. You can call the police and file a complaint, but if they're public lands, they can't be removed.
Right.
If the private property is different, but private lands, they can't.
Right.
I mean, this is a serious issue, and we're the homeless. You know, it seems like it's growing.
Yeah.
You know, and status quo is not working.
Right. So your prediction is this is going to pass?
Yeah, last night the environmental impact report was accepted, voted for, five in favor.
Okay.
And then they also asked, does everybody support this project moving forward? Just to get an indication of how they all feel, and it was 5-0.
Okay, good.
So it's likely moving forward.
In spite of a room full of opposition from the community.
Right.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it was a long. I mean, there was a lot of speakers. I think it was like close to 30 speakers. It was a lot, you know. So I was going to leave early, but I was like, no, I'm going to stick this out. I want to see this to the end and see. I mean, it's all about process and learning. And for somebody that's kind of signed up for something like this, I want to make sure it was there to the end as well.
Right. All right. What's next on your list?
Just want to remind folks that the General Plan Advisory Committee is going to have their next meeting February 24th at the Senior Center from 4 to 8 p.m. This is a long meeting because it's a very critical meeting. We're going to be talking about the land use draft plan. So this is the first sneak peek, or this is the first discussion about what our new general plan is going to look like. This is exciting because all the work that we've done with community outreach, with meeting with groups and talking about housing and zoning, everything's being put together into a draft of what land, of our land use element.
And so, when is that meeting?
February 24th from 4 to 8 at the Senior Center.
4 to 8, okay.
Yes.
2/24, 4 to 8.
That's right. So come in, let us know what you think, and listen to the land use, because there's, you know, issues like how much housing, where, if you have issues or there is things that came up in the last few years that would have needed an amendment, this new general plan could very much decide what that project's going to be.
We're talking to Bernie Narvaez Insurance Services, by day and by 24/7, very involved in the community and a future candidate for city council. We want to hear what you think. You can reach out to me at leewmiller@gmail.com. Maybe you have a burning question. We are happy to address that. So just reach out to me. And also, we welcome suggestions for other guests on the show. But let us know what you think about the conversation that we've had here today. I have a feeling that just as numbers go, we'll probably get some communication from people that say that this shouldn't be, and it'll kind of a continuation of what most of the comments were in the city council meeting last night. So, all right, we still have more time. I know we have more topics that you wanted to cover.
Well, let me just add a quick insurance tip. You know, cyber liability insurance is very important. If you're a business owner, if you hold any personal data of your customers, you're responsible if there's a breach. The breach doesn't necessarily have to be through your computer. It could be a document that it was disposed of incorrectly and got into the wrong hands. You are responsible for reimbursing that person for identity theft monitoring. If there's credit card fraud, the credit card covers it, the client is going to go after you, and there's penalties from the state level. You also can lose business income, and you have costs to restore your data if it's electronic breach. Cyber liability can get as low as $399. It's gotten a lot cheaper in the last year to protect your business from that.
That's interesting in and of itself. Cybersecurity insurance, the price has come down, even though the frequency and the sophistication level of the bad guys continues to increase.
Well, the lower cost one is a limit. So if you're a smaller business, if you don't have that much data, you know, then you get the $399, the limit's up to $250,000 in certain parts of the coverage. It gets higher the more data you have, the higher coverage you want. So there's a tier system there. But there are some businesses that does have data, and if there's a breach, you know, they don't have enough resources to defend themselves and pay out of pocket. So $399 can go a long way to make sure that you have that plan in place and have professionals to help you.
So with that $250,000 limit, would that apply to reimbursing those who have had their funds stolen from them, or would that be attorney's fees or a combination?
All the above. All it's the liability. Above. Okay. So you have third party, so that means that your client's loss of whether it's a loss of identity or of money, right? The liability is going to cover that. So you don't have to pay out of pocket. And then you have coverage for yourself, for your business, damage to your business, loss of income. You have to pay somebody to come in and analyze your data and make sure anything that caused a data breach, it was through technology, through cyber, to make sure that that's been restored to how it was before.
So I think we...
And reputation. Marketing to fix your reputation. And notifications. Okay. Notifications. I mean, we all have seen Target and I think Capital One, everybody notify or send you an email. That costs money. So cyber will help you cover that.
Okay. So there's also cyber security experts.
Yep.
Our mutual friend, Don Hartung, what he does.
Yep.
Always a good idea to talk to him. But in addition, you're saying... cybersecurity insurance.
Well, you can be a safe driver, but accidents happen, right? So you talk to Don. You know what I've done is you know, okay, try and breach my system. How hard is it? Where is it that where are their vulnerabilities? Right, because that's what hackers are going to try to do.
Right.
But remember, it's not just cyber. It could be a physical document.
Right.
What if you didn't shred it? What if you put in the wrong bin and had Social Security, had a credit card number, or had addresses, and that was used to steal somebody's identity,
right.
And it was tracked back to you?
Yeah, or just somebody left that on a desk, was going to shred it the next day, and then it goes missing,
Or if you have credit cards. If you take credit cards, you're liable for that information, too.
Yeah,
so,
a lot to think about.
There's always somebody that's going to be liable. It's either going to be you, the customer, or somebody else.
Right.
But so if it falls on you, there's a really low cost way to protect yourself.
All right. Bernie Narvaez, thank you very much. Paul Nobman, thank you for being here. Remember, live each day of your life as if your legacy matters, because it absolutely does. We'll talk to you next week, folks.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
How can your organization benefit from KBS leaders? KBS Interim Executive and Leadership Consulting has more than 120 years of award-winning experience. The dream team at KBS Leaders brings diverse expertise to address the unique challenges and concerns of any organization. KBS Leaders can fill a vacant position, create a strategy, or enhance the effectiveness of leaders or a team. Led by Kim Brown Sims, KBS Leaders creates and transforms leaders of any type of organization, resulting in a more compassionate, collaborative, and focused workplace. Visit kbsleaders.com to learn more. Schedule a consultation to achieve the unimaginable.
It's time for All Things Napa with your host, Lee W. Miller, a community leader, full-time realtor, and a serial networker passionate about promoting local businesses. Let's learn what's new in the Napa business scene today.